In Dick of the Week, we talk about dirty stuff and use dirty language. We're rated M for mature. Listener discretion is advised.
Dick of the Week. Dick of the Week.
Dick of the Week. Dick. Dick. Dick.
Dick of the Week.
Dick. Dick.
Dick of the Week.
Dick of the Week.
Dick of the Week.
Dick. Dick.
Dick of the Week.
Give me that D, yo.
Hello, everyone. Before we begin this week's episode, I just wanted to give an extra content warning for those of you who may need it. We do discuss rape and lack of consent at the 50-minute mark and how that is related to the book and show Bridgerton. There will be an extra warning right before that conversation begins, so you can jump ahead about 10 minutes if you need to. All right, let the show begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Dick of the Week.
We did it. We're here. Yay.
It's Stephanie!
Yeah! I'm here. It's 10:30 at night. Both my babies are asleep. We'll see if it keeps happening.
But we're here and we're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume if you're listening to us, you know what this show is. But Dick of the Week is the podcast where we talk about everything we love and sometimes hate about romance novels and kind of romance adjacent things at times. As I said, or as we mentioned, that's Stephanie and I'm Liz. And yeah, Stephanie's had an interesting past year.
Yeah, I got pregnant as soon as the quarantine started. I found out I was pregnant on the Wednesday, and by Friday, St. Louis was under pandemic-y new rules. Yeah. So I did my pregnancy away from the whole world, had my baby, and the night we went into the hospital, they didn't really have, they had like a one-person visitor rule. The next morning when I woke up and we were, you know, ready to have the kid, the rules had gone down to no visitors. So that was an interesting, having a baby during quarantine was a very interesting experience.
Now did Jordan count as the visitor, or was he?
No, you could have one person that was helping you. So that could have been I think I could have had two, but only one of them could leave and come back. So like I could have had like a midwife that would have come and then, or like a doula. But I obviously do not have that because, I just was going to get drugged up and push the thing out. For me, if birth is a beautiful thing for you, I love that for you. I love that path, that journey. For me, it is a very weird mechanical body thing that you do to have the child. So for me, I don't want to feel it. This time I did it right. I got induced at 11 PM. My water broke naturally at like 3 or 4. I got my epidural almost immediately. So I felt very mild labor, which was very beautiful because last time I did 32 hours and felt a lot of pain. Yeah. So then I had my baby. So that was the week before Thanksgiving. Then we're here now. So my kid's 11 weeks old, 11 and a half weeks old, almost 3 months.
Jeez.
So, which is great because her sleep's becoming a little more predictable. Although the past few nights she's been giving us hell. So that was why me and Liz have had to reschedule a few times over the past week. But I finally am awake enough to do this and my child is asleep. So that's nice. But yeah, I've had a very weird few months. And then on to that, the realization that I'm not going to go back to work at least for a couple of years, if not until school, kindergarten. And so now I'm like really focused on, I just got all of my book projects ordered and how I'm going to tackle them and all my notes typed up. And now I'm doing the arduous task of creating character sheets for books I've already written. So.
Oh, shit. You have to show me what type of character sheet you use because I've never done that before.
So I've got a really, really, I found a free one and it's like super thorough. I think it might be too thorough for what I need. I almost just want to do like characteristics and like personality traits. And then as I'm writing, fill in the details because I feel like I'm more of a discovery writer versus a here is what it is and then applying it to my writing, if that makes sense. Like I kind of you've seen my outlines. They're real loose. Like I like to do these three things need to happen in the chapter. And then how I get there is on the night I write, I figure it out. I don't know. So yeah, once I figure out what I'm using. So listeners, if you guys have suggestions, please. I put it on Twitter, but then I realized a lot of my writing friends aren't super active on Twitter or slash are like, they follow different formulas for their writing that I don't follow. So I didn't know if that actually would be beneficial. So I deleted that tweet and now I'm just going to kind of like fish around. So I've got a friend who, she has a bunch of, she's got like three author names, which I think is hilarious and great, but she writes like 5,000 words a day and like is and goes to school, but like she's got like a backlog and stuff. So I'm gonna talk to her and see what she does. She's in the midst of writing a really arduous series, so she probably has some pretty good notes, so I'll share that with you, Liz, once I talk to her about it. I kind of did like a 180 because I wanted to do that girl coder launch code thing. And I wanted to do like the year-long thing because basically my husband's a software engineer and he works from home, and like, I don't know, it just feels like that might be the pathway for my next career, because I don't know that I can go back to what I was doing after having two kids and being free from being the mother to a grown adult.
Yeah.
It started out as like being kind of like a partner slash, I mean, like I was always an executive assistant or like an office manager, but I felt like more important than that. But by the end, I was kind of just doing like lunch runs or like, I don't know. It wasn't what I had initially gotten into the job for, which is, I mean, my own fault. I accepted the position. So it is what it is. But yeah, so I want to do a career change. But now that I'm going to be home for a little while, it's like, well, let's fucking write. Let's do this. Because I've got two finished first drafts. It's like, in, you know, series that can follow either of those. And then like, I've got 10 outlines, but I've got 48 ideas that are like large enough ideas that it's like a summary to the back of the book, if that makes
sense.
Jesus
Christ.
Yes.
I am really jealous. I have 9 rough ideas, 2 of which are written or in process of writing.
Well, I mean, like I've got all these ideas, but damn, if I don't write them, what's the point? So that's been my, like, that's been this whole week since the first day of February. That's what I've been working on. Because January, I wrote a little bit every day on a project that is open that I really do enjoy, but I just couldn't make any headway. It's like, why can't I make any headway? And I think it's because I had all of this stuff kind of like in a jumbled mess in my notes folder. And then, like, I didn't have anything written down for, like, I just didn't have anything, like, anywhere organized, which I'm, like, an organized person. I'm an organized chaos person. So like my outlines, there's an outline, but it's vague. So I organized all my ideas. And then today was a grappling on where do I actually start? And so I've decided to start where I have more ideas, because I think my paranormal series has the potential to be one of those series that just keep going. But that means I need to pace out things a little differently. And I've been watching a bunch of like other like indie authors talk about their series, specifically like paranormal series. And, like, that's definitely, like, I think where I need to turn my eye. Or I need to just tighten up and do the trilogy that I had planned. So, and turn my book 2 that I have right now in the trilogy into a different series. So, again, like, so these are a bunch of questions that, like, I need to spend a bunch of time with. But the other series, my Mafia series, I already have the first book done. I already have it, like, 2/3 of the way toward a second draft. Almost ready for beta readers. I'm like, just go with that, Stephanie. That makes more sense.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about this earlier today. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, Liz was my sounding board. And then like I had sent the same kind of message to my other writing friends. And by the time either of them had saw it, I'd already like commented, okay, already decided. Me and Liz talked. I'm done. This is what I'm doing. And they like laughed at me, like, why did you even put this here? I'm like, I don't know. I was just like putting it out into the ether. But as like soon as I typed it in there, I was like, oh, I think I know what I'm doing. It was like as soon as I asked, it was like the question was answered. So I think that I feel good about that, since that was my immediate gut reaction. But yeah, it's dumb as it sounds. I just watched so many craft YouTubes in the last week that it's like, oh, duh, get a backlog going. Like, what are you doing? Like, you have the ideas that are interconnected for series or series adjacent things. Just fucking do it. So
do you have any like craft YouTubers that you are liking? Or
I found a couple that I'm pretty into, and I'll I don't know their names because it's new and fresh, and it's like I watch like 3 or 4 from a couple people, but I'll get those links to Liz and she can link them in the information box, because yeah, a few of them are really good. I'll have to find them. I'll look at the history on my phone. That'll work. I can do that. But yeah, there's one specifically where she actually had a whole series on how to plan a series, which I thought
that's
was
cool.
Yeah, and I watched a few of those. And then Christina C. Jones, a favorite of ours here at the podcast, she has a whole series she recently did on how to do a series. So,
oh, shit. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, and she's like, the way she speaks is so funny because it's like, it, she's not, you know, you watch, sometimes when you watch YouTubes, people put on like a YouTube voice.
Mm-hmm.
She does not. She just sounds like a regular person talking, and I really appreciated it. Because sometimes I get a little, because I know when I was trying to do YouTubes, I did the YouTube voice, because I did like debate in high school and in college, and I have a debate voice. I have a phone voice for when I'm working. For some reason, I turn phony when I have a camera on me or if I'm like on the phone for work or whatever. This podcast, I sound a little bit performative, but not as bad as I do in those settings. And then there's a few I found that like they talked about like how much money they made and like all that stuff. And I found that interesting because a lot of people won't discuss that. First, they talked about like their pricing models and their pricing strategies, and then they talked about how much they made, which was kind of neat because, you know, pricing is a big deal too.
Yeah.
All of it's such a crapshoot now because, like, if you don't trad publish, you just get to do whatever you want and everybody's different and your readership is different. And so I take for kind of a grain of salt.
Well, and I feel like things like Amazon and then places like Facebook where you're advertising, shit changes constantly. So something that was good advice, by the time it's time for you to actually take those steps, like, is that still the accurate advice? And then you have to like do research all over again.
Yeah. So I'm not even like thinking about any of that. Right now it's all about getting content done, getting it turned around for my first edit for myself, getting beta readers' eyes on it. And then I think after the beta readers and I have to do more edits, I think then I'll do my copy editing, just because I don't want to make a bunch of changes and then have to do a second round of copy edits.
Yeah.
I mean, because like a beta reader can tell, beta reading for me is really, does this plot make sense? Is there any questions you have? That kind of stuff. Is this engaging? And then I can fix grammar and that shit on the end. I'm gonna try it that way, and if it doesn't work out that way, then I can switch it around, obviously. But
yeah,
it's just there's a lot to consider. Especially when you get to that level, but you can't get to that level until you have the content. So I just keep telling myself, just keep writing it, and then once you're done writing it, it'll be good.
My big thing I want to focus on, especially, I don't know how long I'll be not actively having a day job, but while I am jobless, using my time better and wiser. Like, I feel like I should have a lot more done since I lost my job this summer than I do. Like, I've made a lot of progress in terms of like Space America and script writing, so that's good. Mm-hmm. And I made a lot of progress during NaNoWriMo, but I feel like it should be a lot more than what I've done.
And well, that's also the danger of this whole pandemic thing, is like there's a lot of beating yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
I know from personal experience, when I got laid off, I was pregnant, so I was overly exhausted anyway, but like I like really couldn't bring myself to do anything.
Mm-mm.
There's a certain level of like when you get cut loose, your self-worth is just, it feels bad.
Yeah, for sure.
And then like throw in money, throw in whatever else you have to worry about because you don't have that job anymore. But it, on the core of it, they said no thank you to you after you've been there. And I don't know, even like when you get intellectualized, oh, they had to cut you for, you know, whatever reasons, it doesn't matter. It's how you feel, you know? So I don't know. You got to cut yourself some slack on that front because you got laid off and you're in a pandemic. Damn.
Yeah. And I just didn't have any creative ability for a chunk of 2020, and it is what it is. And it's a new year. You know, got the motivation. I feel like I've been pretty active creatively since like September, other than I didn't really do anything in December. But December is always like a
break month. you're always burnt out after NaNoWriMo, and then the holidays happen, which are like for me very stressful. If I'm gonna be doing, we did a Christmas dinner with Jordan's parents and my brother and his fiance, and like, though it's enjoyable, but it's still stressful, especially with the pandemic.
Something that you're doing, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Throw the pandemic extra on that too. Like everything I say is like, and then put in the pandemic. Yeah, and but you got a bunch of podcast writing done recently.
Yeah, so Space America is chugging along, which is great. I can't wait for that, all the scripts to be finished and revised and all that, and move forward. And now this month, we're focusing on writing Love and Lust, which is really exciting.
Yes, I'm very excited. It's going to be my weekend projects.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I'm trying to like dedicate certain days to certain things. The first thing I'm going to try is the day blocking thing. So during the week, it's going to be editing during the day, and then at night is writing. Because during the day, I don't have solid time. I've got like an hour here, 30 minutes here kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking like that there's like an hour where both girls are napping most of the time. That hour I can use for editing, which is like, well, I could probably do some good damage there. And then like maybe the hour after dinner is editing, and then writing from 9 until midnight during the week. And then the weekend's going to be for podcasts, and then bonus content for Patreon. And then decide on newsletter stuff if I'm going to do one or not. I haven't decided. I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm just going to run everything through Patreon. And then you just get a digest. So. I don't know. You can link it all to your website too. It's all very, everything can be linked to everything, and it's cumbersome to decide how you want to do it. Yeah. So. Woo. And I got my social media shit in order. So.
I need to make a website at some point sooner than later.
It's always been such a clusterfuck for me. I don't even know. I know. I'm just going to have like links. It's just going to be a page with a bunch of links on it. Because I just can't bring myself to do it. And I need to get Bonnie. And now the quarantine is hard. So I need to like almost like have a video conference with her. She's my graphic design contact. There's just a lot of exciting planning going on right now that I've done a million times. But like this time is different because I actually am like moving forward with it, especially after I wrote every day in January, so I know that I can commit to something. Now it's just like putting more parameters around it. So
yeah, for sure.
And like, you're doing so much. Everyone around me is really busy, and that motivates me to be also busy. So
I feel like it's like, oh, okay, this is our life now. We either need to figure this shit out and stop using the pandemic as an excuse to not get anything done, or just not fucking do it.
That's honestly how I feel.
Like, we don't know how long the situation's gonna be. I can't keep being like, oh, well, you know, pandemic, I just don't have the mentality to do it, which is legit. It was a legitimate thing that everyone's mental health was just fucking shit for a while. Personally, need to like shove myself out of that and be productive now, because I feel like me laying around doing nothing isn't helping that at all.
Yeah, if you're able to get yourself out of it, do that.
Yeah.
And but also not knocking anyone that cannot get themselves out of it, because
no, for sure. Yikes. That's not an option for everybody, and that's scary and it sucks, but personally I know I do better. Like, I can very easily just like spend 2 weeks watching Love Island UK and doing literally nothing else. And then I feel, I'm like, fuck, what the hell did I just do? And then I feel worse. So it's definitely a need to kick myself in the ass and have other people kick me in the ass to be productive now.
I've been really grappling with the whole idea of like the whole, how does capitalism like frame how we do things, or like why we do things? And so for me, this like trying to make this writing thing a career path for myself, or even just like a thing that I'm really dedicated to, I'm trying not to view it as a sense of like replacement. Well, there's a piece of it's like it would be a replacement for having to go back into the workforce in a way that I don't necessarily want to. But then there's also like a piece of it like I just have so many ideas and I just need to do something with them. So I'm trying to like rely heavily on that portion of it. And not think so much about like, well, if I can just do X, then Y will happen. Like, not do that. Like, I'm just trying to enjoy the X part.
Yeah, I feel like there has to be a balance somewhere.
Yeah. Well, because you see, I mean, some of my favorite authors, when I read earlier books, I'm like, damn, this first book. And then like, I can get like, it's the series burnout too, that couple of the podcasts I watch actually talk about this, that the people are so hell bent on making the series that by the fourth or fifth iteration, like the fourth or fifth brother, the fourth or fifth person in the friend group, the books are just worse. Like, they just are. I mean, that's just within a series, you know? So like, if you think about your career that way. So yeah, I'm just trying to like write the stories that I have in my brain so I can stop thinking about them in the shower. I would really like to stop having the same conversation in my head over and over again. The tragedy of that is this conversation doesn't happen until book like 12 on the list. So,
oh no.
I've written down the conversation in every iteration that I've like thought of it. Sometimes I'm worried I'm talking out loud and Jordan's going to hear me and think I'm fucking crazy. Also, it's like such a melodramatic conversation because it's between an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old. So like you can imagine the angst. For me, there's like a piece of it that's like, I really want to do this and I want to see if I can like make quality things that I would enjoy and put them into the world. And if that turns into something more that I can like continuously do it, then that's awesome.
Yeah.
But if I don't, then I will be a hilarious I will have a hilarious backlog of books that my kids will stumble upon at some point and be like, Mom, were you like a famous author? And I'll be like, no, I was not. But I do have a mess of books on Amazon Unlimited, or yeah, on Kindle Unlimited. So enjoy.
Well, let's limit ourselves to one. What is one book you've read recently that you've enjoyed?
Okay, it's called Not the Marrying Kind. Hold on, I need to pull up the title, the author's name, because I do not want to mess it up. It's so good. It's the second in a duet, which is, that's not ideal that I read the second book first, but I didn't
realize. Yeah, especially in a duet.
well, okay, I guess duet's the wrong word. It's a series of two sisters. So the first, the one is the older sister, and the second one is the younger sister. But it's called Not the Marrying Kind. It's on Unlimited. It's by Catherine Nolan. It is, let me read you the little blurb. Type A attorney Fiona Quinn has one goal left to accomplish before turning 30, a big fairy tale wedding. All she needs is a groom. So what if she's ever been in love or even lust before? She's confident she can solve the problem the way she always does with spreadsheets and an action plan. When a family emergency brings bad boy Max Devlin swaggering back into town with his cocky grin, tattoos, and wanderlust, Fiona has to remind herself that he's as unsuitable as it gets. Nope, not happening. No matter how irresistible his invitation for one night or seven between the sheets. Even if she can't tie him down, metaphorically, of course, her pants must stay on. Max can't remember the last time. Seriously, she's like a fun writer. Max can't remember the last time a woman turned him down. He's guaranteed 3 orgasms good. Damn it. So what if he's not the marrying kind? Those sweaty palms he gets when Fiona agrees to help him save his dad's punk rock club are just an allergic reaction to her methodical march toward matrimony. Before he hits the road again, he's going to prove Fiona that life's more fun when you play rather than plan. No one gets hurt when it's just fun and games, right? Okay, so you know how I feel about forced humor. Hate it.
Yes.
This is actually really fun and endearing, and it's because there's a lot of heart and the characters are really vulnerable. So like some jokes and stuff that I think in other books I would have probably rolled my eyes at, I loved. I just like loved it. She's type A to the T, like to the point where she's like, she has spreadsheets about why relationships don't work, which is actually a story point that I saw in a different romance novel that I thought was very trite and I did not like it. But when she does it, it's like, no, this makes sense that she would do this way. Like, I don't know how she did. The writing's really good. It, like I told you, it reminds me of Christina's book where I just think it's like romance plus. So there's this underlying plot of the punk club that her parents are in a punk band. And so her parents have been playing at this punk club for like a decade and a half or 2 decades. And Max's dad owns and runs it. But it's in New York. And so the rent, he owes money for rent. And way more, like $50,000, like way more than he can like scrounge up. So they basically plan a punk rock benefit, and it's just great. It's just so good. And like there's music, they talk about music and they talk about like their love of music, which is like super nice to kind of hear that because it gives them an interest that they both have, even though they're both so different. And each of them have really good like histories, and like I don't know, everyone's fleshed out. And like even without reading the first book, where I would have gotten to know Fiona even better in that first book because her sister is in that one. And her sister is like a tattoo artist, punk rock to the extreme. And like the great part is Fiona's also punk rock, but she's an accountant and does estate planning. So she like, or you know, she's a lawyer and she does estate planning, but like she wears like a blondie t-shirt under a blazer. And like, that's, it's like a fun, again, like it could have been so two dimensional, but it's absolutely not. I think it might be my favorite book that I've read like in the past year even.
Oh, wow.
Like I read this book in one night. Like I stayed up all night reading it. I'm reading this the second one as soon as I get a free day, which I think is Sunday. I'm gonna try to get myself a free day to read it. And the sex scenes are really good. And he's like such a sweetheart. Like he's not the marrying kind, but he's not a douche at all. Like, seriously, not a douche at all. Like, he's just very upfront, which I really appreciated. And then his dad, oh my God, if you don't, like, shed a little bit of a tear when his dad talks. And there's, like, repercussions for people's douchey actions. Like, this Max has been Max has been gone for, like, 7 years and lost contact with his best friend. Like, hadn't talked to him in 6 years. And there's, like, his friend, like, holds him accountable. And it's, like, that's so refreshing in a book to, like, where it's not like, oh, that's just you. You're just, like, this, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's so nice. So, like, I don't know. It's just really delightful book. I joined her group on Facebook. It's super cute. They call themselves hippies. She's, like, a very much hippie chick. And it's, I don't know. And she's, like, bi. So she, like, writes with, like, kind of a queer eye. It's just nice. It's just a nice book. Please read it.
I will.
Yes.
I have a stack of books I'm supposed to be reading now, so.
Just add it.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
I'm going to talk about Crazy Stupid Bromance, book 3 of the Bromance Book Club by Lissa K. Adams.
Oh.
And I just finished this one. I don't know why I put off reading it. Like, it came out. When did it come out? It came out in October, and I couldn't read it during NaNoWriMo because I just didn't really let myself read much during that time frame anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I was reading Christmas books after that. So for those who aren't familiar with the Bromance Book Club books, it's a group of well-off men in Nashville who start a romance reading book club, and they call the romance novels manuals, and they use them to, like, learn how to have relationships, how to treat women, like women empowerment, kind of utilize them to figure out their own shit and, like, how to be better men kind of thing, which is fun. And then each book is about a different member of the club and the gang all helping them figure out their shit. But so this is Alexis, who we meet in book 2. I'll just read the thing. Alexis and her cat cafe, Toe Beans, has shot to fame after she came forward as a victim of celebrity chef sexual harassment. When a new customer approaches to confide in her, the last thing Alexis expects is for the woman to claim that they're sisters. Unsure of what to do, Alexis turns to the only man she trusts, her best friend Noah Logan. Computer genius Noah left his rebellious teenage hacker past behind to become a computer security expert. Now he only uses his old skills for the right cause. But Noah's got a secret. He's madly in love with Alexis. When she asks for his help, he wonders if the timing will ever be right to confess his crush. Noah's pals in the Bromance Book Club are more than willing to share their beloved manuals to help him go from bud to boyfriend. But he must decide if telling the truth is worth risking the best friendship he's ever had. A hacktivist and a cat cafe owner decode the friend zone in this romantic comedy from the author of Undercover Bromance. I really liked it. I think I like this one more than I liked book 2. Book 1 might... I think I like this one better than book 1. So my ranking of them goes 3-1-2 currently. And it's just fun. I never know. I assume it's Lissa. I should ask. Because it's L-Y-S-S-A, so I feel like that's Lissa, not Lisa.
Yeah, I think that for some reason the double S makes me feel like it's Lissa.
Yeah. So I like her voice a lot. She's funny. Again, like, it doesn't ever really feel like it's that forced humor kind of thing. She has a very clear voice. She writes characters really well. I liked Noah a lot. He's got a sad past because his dad died when he was younger while fighting in Iraq, I think. And so that's why he turned to his hacker ways, because he wanted to, like, take down the government. So even, like, he's a billionaire now, but he also, like, hates people like that and, like, people who get rich because they're, you know, doing wrong and whatnot. So it has some there's a lot of drama that goes on in this book, and I mistakenly read this one part that was kind of like talking about grieving a dead parent on my mom's death anniversary, and I was just sitting there, like, sobbing. I'm like, why can't I get away from this?
Jesus. It's like, Gina. Oh, man.
But other than that, it was wonderful. And I definitely recommend her books. And she's getting a Netflix movie. So that'll be cool.
A lot of people are cleaning up on those Netflix movies.
Fuck yeah. Netflix, keep giving all those romance writers shows and movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
Perfect segue. That didn't even mean to happen. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about everyone's favorite Netflix show of the moment, Bridgerton.
Yes.
Who wouldn't want the hunky hero and the fantastic leading lady to be brought to life? With Love and Lust, a Smutcast, indulge in a radio drama filled to the brim with romance, laughs, and all those wonderfully awkward moments that come with a new relationship. And don't forget those delicious sexy parts that make romance novels oh so fun to enjoy. Season 1 of Love and Lust is available now at calamitycast.com or anywhere that you can find podcasts.
Okay, well, we are back.
Yes.
And we are going to talk about Bridgerton, both the Netflix show and a little bit about the first book in the series by Julia Quinn, The Duke and I. I'm sure we'll focus a little bit more on the show than the book, but we'll kind of talk about it all hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you did not read the book before seeing the show, correct?
Did not. Did it the order I usually would never plan to do something. I would almost never watch a show before I read the book. Because it's like almost like you get the spoiler, so it's almost like reading the book feels pointless.
Yeah.
But this time I watched a show, and then I read the book. Didn't read it faithfully, nor did I finish it.
That's fine. I read it back in last February, so I read it a year ago, and then I was going to reread it for the purpose of the show, and I was like, I don't really want to. So instead, I've been moving forward with the other books, and I have been enjoying her other books a bit more than I liked The Duke and I, but I went into the series being told that by a lot of Julia Quinn fans. They're like, oh, it gets better. Like, it really gets picking up around, like, book... Some people even say by book 2, which is Anthony's book. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will say, like, book 3 or 4 is when they really start liking the series. So I don't feel bad that The Duke and I was kind of, like, a so-so historical novel to me.
Yeah, that was, like, I really tried. It just wasn't my cup of tea. And I don't know if it's because I'm used to, like, more 2020 versions of historical romance novels
versus
2000.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a big difference,
because I just feel like, I don't know, I don't know if it's kind of like my expectations possibly were different than what this book was offering, slash also watching the TV show. The tone felt very different to me.
Yeah, and we both really enjoyed the TV show.
Yes. Yeah, and we'll get into the parts that we had issues with, but I loved the vibe of it, to use a very technical word, the vibe of the show.
No, but it did have a really cool vibe. Like, I just like the look of it, the costumes, the music, like
it's opulent. It was just like, it was rich, and
It was like a very tasty morsel.
Yes. Like, absolutely.
It was visually beautiful, both like the costumes, the setting, the people.
And I
have heard some people said that they did not think that Daphne and Simon had good on camera chemistry, but I think I disagree with that.
I think that they had the kind of chemistry that I expect from like a historical, a girl who is a virgin, who's never masturbated,
who doesn't know what sex really even is, and is being forced to marry this guy when she thought she was going to marry for love her entire life.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, she has kind of fallen for him as best as she understands it, and doesn't think he has fallen for her. So there's a level of like, oh, this guy doesn't love me, but I'm marrying him, so that sucks. And like, that's that. I don't know. I thought they had good chemistry. I mean, I think he could have chemistry with like a bag. I don't even think he needs a person to play opposite him. He's fantastic. He's got that smolder.
So fucking good looking.
Holy shit. He's pretty and he's handsome. So figure that one out.
No, he really is though.
Yeah.
And oh boy, does he look good in Regency London period clothing.
He really does. He really does.
Really, all the Bridgerton boys did too. They pull off that look well.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it just nicely done. Nicely done.
Good job.
I saw a lot of people saying that they didn't have chemistry. And I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. Like, I don't think it was, I think it was appropriate for what it was supposed to be.
Right. Like, she was a little awkward, which, like, duh.
Right. I think when we get to the, like, once they're married, we see that them loosen up so much that it was, like, super, I thought that was really good. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Once they're actually married and, like, before shit goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like each other. Like, they became good friends.
Yes.
And so they are very loose with each other and relaxed and bang everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that was my, like, when people were like, hey, you don't have any chemistry. It's kind of like, I don't know if I agree with that. Because I thought it was good. And, like, but again, I don't know how much of that was him and how much of it was her. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? Does it matter? I felt it. So
I know a lot of people made comments regarding more or less like their faces when they would reach climax and how awkward that was. I'm like, well, I mean,
not everyone looks nice when they have an orgasm. Let's talk about that. Do we need to have that real talk? Really?
Like, the majority of people don't.
It's not you're not usually worried about what your face looks like.
You're just enjoying the moment, yo.
Right? My favorite part was in the infamous scene, before it becomes infamous, when she gets on top, he makes this, like, happy, pleasantly surprised face, and then the moment as it crumples, like, I thought that was, like, one of the best acted scenes, because the way he just, like, goes from, like, pleasant surprise that his, you know, virginal wife is getting on top to, oh god, no, wait, I thought that was done super well. He's a great actor.
He is a great actor, and I mean, I hope he continues to have an active role as the show gets more seasons, but I also hope that he gets to just have a bunch of new roles as the years go on, because
absolutely.
I mean, I think everyone kind of fell in love with him, and he's talented, and he's beautiful, and he should just be, like, the new leading man in all everything.
I sign off on this. Well, and, like, you know, it's funny because when the show started, I said to Jordan, and I were talking about it, and I was like, we're like, these all the brothers all are interchangeable, like, you could just, it doesn't matter. And it was funny because when I started reading the book, they actually make a comment about how all the boys are interchangeable with one another, and I was like, oh, so that's on purpose. Okay.
Yeah, for real, because I'm in yeah, because I'm on book three right now, which is Benedict's book, and his mom is hosting a masquerade ball, and, like, it's really a point of contention for him that, like, because, you know, they're masked and everything, but everyone's like, oh, it's a Bridgerton, and then they're like, which one are you? And he's just like, fucking A, guys, come on.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, are you Colin or are you Benedict? Doesn't really matter. You're a Bridgerton. And he's like, yes, it does matter. I'm my own person.
Right.
And so that's when he meets the heroine of that book. She had never met any of the Bridgertons before, but because of Mrs. Whistledown's paper, she's like, oh, she had no idea he was a Bridgerton, period. And then once Colin came over to the conversation, she realized, oh, these are Bridgertons. And he's like, well, do you know which one I am? And she said, oh, yeah, you're Benedict, right? And he's like, and he was like, like, it was like a, oh, my God.
Boulder City, man.
Yeah, for real, kind of. Like, he was like, he was so impressed and happy. And he's like, how do you know this? And she's like, oh, well, the paper says that you're the tallest of all the boys. And so kind of just put two and two together. And he was like, I think he fell in love a little bit there, that someone knew who he fucking was.
That's adorable.
But yeah, so I mean, that definitely is on purpose. Are all supposed to look pretty similar, but it can get tricky being like, oh, is that Anthony or is that Benedict? I can always tell if Colin because he was younger than the other two, but
right. Yeah, I made that joke and then I was like, oh, okay, good. That was supposed to be a joke. I was worried for a minute. I was just like, you know, oh, white handsome dude casting, because that's a lot of movies. I regularly cannot keep the white dude straight in movies, and Jordan and I will have I will sometimes mistake who's saying what and be like, wait, why are they saying that? And then I am wrong. So it is what
that's
it is.
Hilarious.
I'm not good at telling the handsome men apart. Like, you have to have something different about your face for me to be able to tell who the hell you are. So
that's fair.
I mean, they all look kind of the same.
Yeah. Especially when it's like bearded white boys with glasses.
I'm at a loss. I don't know. Where do you want to, like, where do you want to go? I think that Netflix took something, and I think that because they've definitely sourced all of the books, because there were some things that were done in the show, like Marina having her teeth looked at, which mm-hmm. is like super gross, and like because we're American, there's like a hearkening to like slavery in that, especially because she's like the only non-white debutante that's a main character,
right?
Apparently in like the seventh book, one of the Bridgerton sisters, whoever's the youngest, Hycynthia, I think it is, she actually has like her teeth looked at by someone's mother. So I don't know. I don't know if they're trying, because a couple times in the series they make a point of saying, like, making a point that race is still an issue. What's her face, lady? Oh my god, I should have written down names because it's late and I haven't slept. Lady Danforth. I keep wanting to say Forsyth because that's that Danworth Forsyth thing here in St. Louis. The fucking across from Monsanto is like all I can think of. Anyway, she says to Simon about how, you know, love conquers everything. He's like, if the king had, you know, he can easily fall out of love with his queen, suggesting that race is still an issue. So I don't know if the writers on accident put something in from a later book for a character that maybe that wasn't the most delicate place to put that.
The race thing, like, I am very happy that they have various people of color. But one thing Jeremy and I were discussing about it was, I don't know, it was like they tried to make it sound like half the time it was, oh, race isn't really a thing, that's mm-hmm. an issue. And then the other time they'd have like that conversation. Is it Dan? Hold on, I'm looking. Danbury?
Yes.
Yeah, Lady Danbury. Oh my God.
I'm like sitting here like, what is her name? And all I can think about is that science building. God.
Danbury. Like when Simon and Lady Danbury have that conversation, I don't know, like it felt kind of forced. Like it was like they weren't quite sure where they fell in the show regarding
they didn't want to decide if it was an alt you or is this history, like,
right?
And for me, I was like, I would have just been fine with you just casting the way you cast and just rocking through the show, like,
yes.
I had the same like weird feel about that. It was like either you're making a statement or you're not making a statement, and just decide.
Well, and the other thing that Jeremy pointed out, and he's pointed this out about various things we've watched recently, was it was mostly only white people and black people. Like, you didn't really see any Asian people or other ethnicities white. And that was an interesting choice as well. Like, you know, there's so many background people walking by and doing things, and I don't think really I don't think I saw any Asian people, maybe one.
Well, and even with adding in main characters that were black, there it was still so predominantly white, like, just like, so even throwing in, just, it was still so predominantly white that like all the bad things were basically happening to the black people in the show. Like, Marina had the worst fate on the show. Simon had all of the abuse.
Lady Danbury is pretty badass.
She was great, but she also hinted, though, at her own past of, like, being made fun of and belittled. So, I don't know. It's just, they have to make a choice. And again, I love that they decided not to just make an all-white historical romance. Thank you.
Yes.
But there is a level of, like, you have to decide what you're doing. So if you're doing this, you're just like, you know what? It doesn't really matter we're just it's a diverse cast, fine. If you're trying to make a statement and be like, okay, we're gonna tackle racism on this historical romance, then you gotta tackle it. You can't just like sometimes say weird little half-assed things and then go, okay, but back to the romance. Like, just make a choice. And you know what? Viewers are going to be okay with either choice, because what happens now is like you kind of like open the door and it like there's a lot of really racist shit being said in like Jane Austen fandom groups and like
really
yeah well because you know this is like the gateway of diverse casting, because if you look at some of the castings for Persuasion,
and
if you look at the cast of that, there's been some shitty things said about the male lead, and it's just so I don't know.
And I feel like there's something going on with the Nora Roberts thing that's being made also. Like, and she got really upset and like pretty much like yelled at her fans to be like, if you're going to have this attitude, don't fucking read my books. Like, bye.
Yeah. So here's the thing. A lot of romance writers that are getting these deals are white. Like, yeah. Period. End of story. It is not. There's this. Oh, God. There's total sidebar that I will quickly touch just because I need to make this point. This woman released a book with a black couple. The cover was an illustrated cover with two black people on the front. She's a white woman. And then it was a big thing on Twitter this week.
Yeah. Okay. I only saw someone say something in regards of, if you're a white author, please don't pretend you're black. And I was like, what the fuck is happening?
She obscured the fact that she was white. Like, she like, it was rough. But anyway, white writers are getting these deals. So if we aren't adapting them to the TV with like a writer's room that's more diverse, then we're just gonna have a bunch of white fucking romances. We don't want that. So having it, I don't know what the makeup of these writer's rooms are, because I didn't look into it, because I'm a terrible podcaster and I apologize. But my dream would be, if my book or something got picked up by Netflix or something, is that there'd be a diverse writing room that could adapt my work to make it more applicable to more people, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I can write a certain amount within my scope of experience, and even I can write side characters that are diverse, right? But like, if we want to highlight those side characters in spin-off episodes or whatever, we need a diverse room to do that. Readers are getting upset because their favorite character who had blonde hair and blue eyes is no longer looking like that. Does it actually fucking matter to you? Like, it's so insane. And I mean,
it is insane.
Especially when you think about the fact that it's still going to be a white writer putting money in their pocket from this like diversity. I don't know. It's a mess. It's a mess.
I am curious about the writer's room, because it is a Shondaland production. So I would hope.
I'm sure. I'm going to look it up. I'll look it up. I'll report back.
Like, if it weren't a Shondaland thing, then I'd be like, oh, it's probably a mostly white room.
Right.
But I'm a little hopeful, because it's her, that maybe it's not.
It's a diverse writer's room. Yeah. Yeah, it's diverse.
Cool. Awesome.
It's like, this is a good looking, yeah.
Like, yeah, you're all very attractive. I like this.
It's nice when it's not just a bunch of white guys. I'm having a moment of...
Especially when it's fucking romance. Like, that never makes any sense to me.
I don't even understand. I'm gonna send you the link so you can see it.
Cool.
And maybe we could share it somewhere. But it's wild to me when these readers are so upset. So upset. I mean, but to be honest, sci-fi people are saying, the reason why, I mean, I still think that Finn got the shaft in the Star Wars. Because of the fandom. They're terrible.
Oh, well, the Star Wars fandom is just toxic as fuck regardless.
But I mean, but that's like all of the fandoms right now. Like, anytime someone that isn't white is being introduced to any of these fandoms, this is what happens.
And or what's disgusting. The girl, what was the girl in The Last Jedi? I really liked her. Rose?
Yes.
Like, how she got like publicly bullied on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then the next movie they gave her like two lines.
Yep. Yep.
Fucking A.
So it's like, it's just, so I think we're seeing that in romance, which is like really gross. I mean, but it's not surprising, because look at who gets the bigger book deal. I mean, they've shown it time and time again, who gets the bigger advances, who gets what shows a lot. And so when we're adapting these books, it's really nice to see a writer's room that's diverse. It's really nice to see the actors being cast that aren't just all white, changing the story to try to like broaden the scope. You know, I still think that they need to be purchasing more IP from Black creators.
And oh, for sure.
I should just say non-white creators, honestly, because
speaking of which, we are like 2 weeks away from the third To All the Boys I Loved Before movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited.
Man, that second one was a ride.
It was.
It felt like nothing happened, but okay, I'm ready.
Oh, hey, it's Liz again. We are about to start talking about the infamous rape scene that occurs in Bridgerton, the show, and the book, The Duke and I. If you are uncomfortable by this conversation, skip ahead about 10 minutes. If you hear us talking about Penelope, you're safe. Thank you. All right, let's continue.
Okay, so the one thing we should talk about, though, before we wrap up today is the infamous scene, book v show. Like I said, I can speed read, and so I did to this part, and then I read it, and then I was kind of just done with the book because, you know, I know how it ends. Again, I think watching the TV show, I should have probably read it before I watched the TV show, honestly. I probably could have read it if I hadn't seen the TV show, or finished it, rather. I did read it, did not finish it. The book is, I don't know which is worse. I think the book, because he's, like, way more vulnerable, and she definitely takes advantage. My problem with the TV show, we should probably say what happened. I'm just talking in vagueness. So in both plot lines, basically Simon has said, in the book he says, I cannot have children, is like what he says. In the show he says, I will not have children.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first difference that makes it, it colors the situation a little. So in the book, so if you've seen the show, there's basically a pull-out montage. He just fucking, there's like all this like hot sex, and then he pulls out, and it's like, I could not laugh. It was ridiculous. All the pulling out. He is the pull-out king. So she doesn't know anything about sex, so she thinks this is just how sex is, and she's confused on why it happens that way, right?
Yes.
So she's talking to, who the hell does she talk to?
In the movie, she talks to her maid.
Her maid. And then, yeah.
And I don't remember if that's the case or not in the book.
She talks to someone. They basically fill her in that without the details, they kind of let her know that that's not normal. And that how you get pregnant is via, coming in you. And so she puts one and one together and discovers.
I like Jordan giggle in the background.
She puts one and one together because she's clearly a genius, that he is not giving up what she needs to have children. And so therefore it was a lie. In the book, I feel like it is more of a lie. I think in the movie or in the TV show, I think it's more of an omission, but I think that there's more of an outright lie in the book. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make it okay what she does. But in the book, he's drunk. She gets on top. She does not let him pull out. In the show, same thing, which is that scene I was talking about where he looks delighted and then horrified. And it was so hard to watch because, as you know, when he says wait, which I think the writers did a kind of tried to clever their way out of this being just a hardcore, like, that's rape. But that's what it is. There's a lot of issues. And then, so in the book, I think it's written way more traumatic. And I think that that's actually, it's to its strength, that he's way more traumatized by the situation. Then the show, he stutters and stammers a little bit. But then after it, it's almost like, they're just like, I don't trust you. Not so much that there was a transgression of a physical nature. It was more just, he's like, I don't trust you because you're trying to get pregnant by me.
Yeah.
It made, because like within a second, so she gets on top, he comes, she gets off, she goes to leave the room, and he's like, what did you do? And then she turns it on him and makes it his fault. And then it turns, and then the next time that they have any kind of sexual intimacy at all, he goes down on her and he's like, I don't trust you to have sex with you. And then it's like they like play like cutesy music in the background and it's them like giving each other the cold shoulder. But like sexy cold shoulder. I don't even know. It was so weird. And then eventually he almost like thanks her for having like raped him. Like he's like, cause she explains like if you let your father, again, as Jordan says, it's dumb fucking promise for him not to have kids. It was a very dumb promise.
Yeah. Cause he said he's not going to have kids to get back at his dead dad, which is dumb, but in his brain it made sense. And she didn't. But he also didn't explain any of that. And like, I don't know. I thought the book was more problematic than the movie, mostly because he was drunk and asleep. He got aroused in his sleep And she was like, and starts like playing with him. And so like he eventually kind of sort of wakes up. She like, I'm just going to read part of the line.
Oh, see, I think that that's more problematic. I'm saying his response to
So, I mean, this even says it. Daphne had aroused him in his sleep, taken advantage of him while he was still slightly intoxicated, and held him to her while he poured his seed into her. Like, that's like his view of it later on. Or earlier, like when she undresses him when he's like still mostly asleep, and he wakes up and he's like, oh, this feels so good. I like this. And that's when she gets on top. And she literally grips him and she uses force to keep herself on, like, I don't know. It's not cool. It's not cool at all.
Nope.
During the sex scene, because he's drunk and asleep and horny, he's like, oh, great. Like, it's the same thing in the show. Like, he had that look of like, ooh, yes. And then it's like, you know, it all goes to hell. And then I think he ends up even like, after it happens, like, his stutter comes back, which was...
Yes.
Yeah, there it is. He says... how could you, he repeated, you knew, and then he starts stuttering, and she, at this point, oh, this is the part that really pissed me off, but she had just curled up in a little ball, her knees tucked against her chest, obviously determined to not lose a single drop of him, so she's trying to keep the cum inside her.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah, and that's awful. Awful.
And like there's a lot of stuttering that happens and he just like stops talking.
Yeah.
And Daphne said, hurrying to his side, her voice grew panic. Simon, say something. She reached out to touch his arm, but he threw her off. Don't touch me, he exploded.
Yeah, like this response to me is like better.
Yeah, this complete loss of speech, this choking, strangling feeling. He had worked his entire life to escape it, and now she brought it back to him in full vengeance. So, and I think that's like, it's like it triggered him to be back to that little boy who couldn't speak with an abusing dad. And they didn't touch any of that in the show, which like I understand, but also I don't know.
It just, to me, again, yeah, I think in the book it's way clearer. They took all the gray out for me in the book for sure. Like,
yes,
there's no question what happened. The TV show tried to gray it up a little bit, and then like there's a weird amount of, and then he doesn't like react really.
Yeah, and then she's the one that gets like really upset that he lied to her or whatever. And like, I feel like she does deserve to be upset that he lied, but he also
that doesn't make what she does okay. Like,
exactly.
And also, his wrong is nothing in comparison to her wrong. Like, because she was going to have to marry him anyway because of the whole honor situation. So, like, for me, it's like she would have still married him even if she knew that he purposefully wasn't doing this, right? Like, I don't know. There's just a part of me that's like, I feel like viewers were probably trying to be like, oh, because of that, this makes it okay. And it's like, it's super not okay. Super not okay. Him not saying exactly what he meant does not mean that she gets to rape him. Like, it's the same, like, it's considered rape if a man says he's using a condom and doesn't use a condom, right? Like, so, but like in the show, they like don't really, they don't have him have this massive like reaction, and then on top of that, he almost thanks her later on, like, and he comes there and he's like, thank you for like helping me see the error of my judgment or whatever. And it's like, that's fucked.
Yeah. And it's one thing to be like, thank you for helping me with my dad shit.
Yeah.
But then it stops there.
Stops there. Also, you could have done it a different way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it broke my heart because like the rest of the show was like so spot on for me.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what's funny? We had talked about this series maybe a year ago or more when initially we read that it had gotten picked up for a series, and I thought, oh, I might read that. And I read the reviews on Amazon, and there's lots of people talking about the rape scene. So I was like, oh, I can't read that. That's too much. And so I didn't read it for that reason. So then when this show came on, I was like, why does this sound so familiar? And didn't like look into it at all. So I was like, I'm like shocked when it's that fucking storyline. because I'm an idiot. So that's a fun thing that happened to me while I was watching the show. It's a big flaw, I feel like. And we'll see what happens, because they kind of alluded to the fact that we're not done with Daphne and Simon. I don't know what that means, but they're still going to have storyline. So I don't know if there's going to... I hope that maybe there's still some like residual something about that.
I don't know. The way that the series ended with like them having a baby and being happy, seemed like he was over it and they were past it.
You're probably right.
What do you think about the reveal of who Miss Whistledown is at the end of the Netflix series when you don't find that out until book 4 of the book series?
I think that they had to do that because like in the book, even like, of course, I didn't finish book 1, but I did skip to Penelope's book because I liked what I read from the blurb of what that storyline was going to be. I love a good unrequited love. I think they kind of had to do it because in the book they can tease it, like, because Penelope's saying like, oh, I don't know about that, I don't know, all the time. It's like, it's kind of silly, I guess, and I feel like they didn't want to play that game.
Well, I think it does also allow, in the next couple seasons, to allow an interesting plot point for Penelope.
Yes.
Now that we know that, but the other people don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I think it was necessary. I don't think that they could do what the books did in keeping it a secret for that long. Just because, by nature of just the media, I don't know, like, I watch a lot of, like, Pretty Little Liars and stuff like that, which there's, like, always, like, a mystery, or, like, Gossip Girl, which is, like, kind of what it's based off of, and it's kind of fun to be in on the secret this time.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if it had pulled a Gossip Girl and we found at the very end that it's Dan, we're just like, fuck you!
Yeah, that was really, I forget that it was Dan sometimes, and then I remember and I'm mad.
Me too.
So it's, like, it's probably for the best that they told us.
Which in the Gossip Girl books, it's never announced who Gossip Girl is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never.
So they made up Dan for the, like, they made up that it is Dan for the show.
They pick the worst person.
Yeah.
I would have more readily believed it was Jenny than Dan, but okay.
Oh, for real. For real. Yeah. Anyway, Gossip Girl's facts. So everyone, the thing that's annoyed me the most about Bridgerton is everyone being like, ugh, it's just a Gossip Girl wannabe set in Regency era. I'm like, fuck you. These books came out first. Like,
also, and even if it was, that sounds fucking awesome.
It does. And I would watch that regardless.
So shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I love Gossip Girl, and you can never pry it away from my hands.
That's the Dick of the Week stance on that. You can go fuck yourself. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that it got renewed.
Me too.
Didn't it got renewed for more than one season, right?
I think so. That's, I mean, it's great. It was like the top rated, like, most watched Netflix show ever.
Yeah, and it got it again.
The only thing that is bothering me a little bit is, like, the non-romance readers, like, acting as if this is a new thing. It's like, all right, romance has been very large and very popular for a long time. You just turned a blind eye to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with the bromance series. Those guys acting like they're the first guys to ever have read a romance novel. It's like... You can stop now. No one invited you to this conversation. You can sit down. Just go ahead and sit down.
But it's like one of those, I don't know. It's also at the same time like, well, welcome to the genre, new people who are going to start reading romance novels because of Netflix, and maybe that will make other people's book sales go up, and maybe Netflix and other networks will buy more romance novels. And may I suggest you please make something from Sarah McLean, please?
Oh, yeah. That would be good.
I want her books that are set in the gaming hell so bad. Or the Bare Knuckle Bastards would be an awesome show. Oh, my God.
See, these are all the things I want. That's also, I think, I view a lot of this stuff through the lens of what is like this that I wish was also made into a TV show. And so I'm trying to do it from that perspective versus, like, I've seen a lot of people do the, well, this would be better. And it's like, why can't we have both?
Yeah, I want all of it. I want all of it.
Let's all adopt that attitude. Why yes. not both?
Yes, I want both. Give me everything. I'm going because to be selfish.
We don't get a whole lot of bones thrown our way. So let's let's not pretend. Like, we don't have to just pick one. Like, that was one of the arguments in the MCU where, like, they're like, well, we're going to give you this. We're giving you a Black Widow movie. And it's like, well, okay, cool. But we also want all these other things, too. So get to it.
Oh, one last Bridgerton related thought. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm just like, everything's just, I'm just going to keep talking. I know you don't do the TikTok thing the way that I do, but have you heard of the TikTok Bridgerton musical?
I have, and I've watched them. People keep sending, I get them sent to me by people that are younger and on the TikToks.
I am on the TikTok as well. And
you are on the TikTok?
I am on the TikTok.
I got one so that I could watch all of these things about the early 2000s. Because yeah. That's what I'm into. It's embarrassing.
I'm on the TikTok. The only things I have posted currently are kitty cat videos. Eventually, I will enter the world of BookTok, but one day.
BookTok is scary. There's a lot.
Scary. There's a lot. And you have to make it so pretty and whatever. People just get videos of my black cats. That's fine.
I love it. I love that. That's the content I'm here for.
Yes. So, okay. The Bridgerton musical. I think it's catchy. I think it's fun that they're doing this. Jeremy thinks the music's really boring, which makes me laugh. My thing is, so people are like, oh my God, I want this to be a real show. Like, I would pay to see this. Or like, and then the two ladies that are making it are like, oh, we're thinking of just doing like a concept album. And I'm really curious. Someone said they looked it up and Julia Quinn sold the rights to Netflix. Like, they have the rights for everything Bridgerton related, so I guess I'd have to have Netflix permission if they actually wanted to like make this album and sell it for money. Like, it just seems like such a gray fuzzy line of like putting it on TikTok for fun where like you may or may not make some money on it just depending on your clicks versus making an album that you're selling for money. Like, I feel like that's taking fan fiction and then selling it without changing any names or characters or anything.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I would be nervous if I were them.
Me too. And I know people, like, people have mentioned that and they've made some comment of like, oh, like, I don't even know. I'm curious. I want to know more about like the behind the scenes stuff and what their plans are moving forward legally wise, legality reasons.
It's almost like they should almost just use the momentum and do something else.
Right, like, because like currently all the musicals that have happened on TikTok have been like Ratatouille the musical and now Bridgerton the musical, and they get really popular on TikTok, which is great, but then it's like you can't really do anything with it because it's fan fiction. Sure. But I did find someone on TikTok who he's making a musical called Epic, and it's based on the Odyssey. I'm like, oh, that's fucking old. You can do whatever you want with that.
I saw this. This is kind of related, but Dracula came into eminent domain. Dracula's been in eminent domain, but someone else came out into eminent domain. I can't remember.
Frankenstein.
Okay,
I think Frankenstein did this year.
Well, so someone was like, just so you know, if you're writing a vampire book, you better put Dracula in it. It's free. And I was like dying. I was like, you're not wrong. You're not wrong, guys.
I mean, yeah, anything that's in the public domain, fucking do it, yo, if you're into it. Like,
yeah.
I will one day actually finish my modern Phantom of the Opera adaptation and I will put that on Amazon because why the fuck not?
Love it. We love that.
Because Phantom of the Opera is in public domain. Yes. Okay. Are you ready for a Regency pickup line?
I am. Thank you for asking.
Pick number 1 through 6.
5. That's how I know it's good, because you're already laughing at it.
Does your father have a title? Because you have to get up pretty early to make a girl as beautiful as you.
They did it.
Pun on the word Earl, and also early morning fucking? Like, what?
I don't even... But, like, my parents fucking.
Right.
Which, well, like, that's...
Weird flex, bro. Did I just say weird flex?
I was going to add the bro to the end as well.
Oh my god, get out of my brain.
You beat me to the bro. The thing is, we don't have to actually talk actual words at each other for so long, and we're still stuck in each other's heads. That's how you know this is real love. That's how you know. And you all should be jealous.
Yes, it's very true.
What I'm gonna say to you guys, like, y'all should just be jealous.
Y'all got nothing on this romance.
Right? This is the romance. Y'all, oh my god. That's very silly.
Well, I think that's about it.
Yep.
Y'all know where to find us. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Check out calamitycast.com. Buy some sweet, sweet merch. We should come up with some cool Dick of the Week related merchandise to put on the website.
We need to have a business meeting. I've got some ideas for some stuff because I'm kind of doing it for my own shit. So why not also do it for this shit?
Yes. Love it. Yes. All right. Well, until next time, y'all. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. We would love to hear from you, so contact us at lnlsmutcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at lnlsmutcast. Find episodes of this and other great shows at calamitycast.com or wherever you find your podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Dick of the Week.
This has been a Calamity Cast production. For more content, visit calamitycast.com and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.